Right back at you.
Mac, do you remember when music was on MTV?
No.
I barely remember that anymore.
Nowadays, MTV is just ridiculousness and catfish, and somehow the Jersey Shore guys and gals are still
going, man. They are still going. Yeah, you can get a check like that and continue to take in all that money and steal. Go for it.
Yeah, I never watched MTV growing up. I don't think.
No, that wasn't the Total Request Live was like the last good music show, in my opinion, and then they took that off the air.
Well, then it just became like 30 seconds of music, and they just did like conversations at town, or what do they call that?
Times Square. Yeah, you're town right. Center. But that's where, town center, a little bit different. But that's where I discovered Britney Spears was on that Total Request Live. Oops, I did it again. I played with your heart. I am the Bengals.
Speaking of playing with your heart, the Royals have been pulling the heartstrings of their fans for the last week and a half. They have lost 7 in a row. They get back at it tonight. Somebody in the text line says, well, good news about yesterday. The Royals didn't lose.
That's true.
That's right.
They didn't win either.
No.
And they lost a half game.
But they do start a 3-game series tonight in Washington. That first pitch is at 5:45. Vern's on deck show. I believe we'll start at 4:45.
That's right. So let's have a frank conversation about this team right now, right? We've got 6 games to go, okay? We've got an incredible season that took place. But I don't know, Dusty, the way that I'm feeling right now, it all comes down to these 6 games. Everything that we've witnessed so far doesn't matter at all, except what they do in these next 6 games. We're talking about a great season, and we're looking at a great season that could become crashing down all around us. And it will be looked at as an epic collapse. I mean, a month ago, this team had a 6.5 game lead for a postseason spot. They were in first place. They were tied for first with the Cleveland baseball team. And now they're barely holding on for dear life. And ultimately, we will judge this season, in my opinion, based on these final 6 games. If they collapse and they don't get in, you know what the narrative is going to be going into this offseason with the Royals. Oh, they can never get it done. They just can't get it done. And here we are with 6 games to go. The entire narrative of their season is going to be determined over the next 6 games.
The Royals going tonight heavy favorites against Washington. Cole Reagan's on the mound. The Royals are -170 on the money
line.
That's
a big number.
Washington +142. So you can see where they think this is going to happen, as it is Michael Parker versus Cole Reagan's, the ace of your staff. Somebody who really needs to go out there and stop the bleeding.
Right. Can't give up a run.
Right. And that's the thing. Can the offense get going? Can these next 6 games? I think we all agree they got to go 4-2.
Is that what you're thinking?
I think it's 4-2. Okay. I was talking to Kramer about it yesterday. He was asking me, he's like, what are your thoughts on the Royals, man? It's like not been going pretty well. I was like, yeah, no. I was like, you got to win 4 out of, next 6.
Yeah.
You got to win, 2 out of 3 versus Washington and somehow win 2 out of 3 versus Atlanta. And again, Atlanta's still fighting and playing well. Washington, obviously not a great team. They're not going to make the playoffs, but this is one of those series where, you get Lorenzen back,
right?
One of the guys you acquired in the trade deadline. You have Cole Reagan's going tonight. You need to somehow win 2 out of 3 versus Washington. Maybe you can get a little bonus money and you can win 3 out of 3, sweep Washington, a team that's probably thinking about Fiji or Atlantis or Bermuda, Aruba, but something like that. And that's what the Royals need to do tonight, because I'll tell you this. We talked about this yesterday coming into the show this week after the brutal home stretch of losing 6 straight at home, losing 7 straight in a row. Sky is falling. The collapse is in the back of your mind. And you go into this, and that can easily be forgotten if you can go and handle business in Washington and show that your offense has some sort of light. I'll be interested to see what the lineup looks like tonight. Who's hitting first? Who's hitting fifth? That's what I'm looking at in the lineup. Because I know who's hitting third. I know who's hitting second. I want to know who's hitting fifth, and I want to know who's leading off. And I really want to see if this team can handle adversity the way that they've done it before in the season, where they've lost 2 or 3 in a row, and everyone's like, well, here comes a losing streak. Then they lose 7 in a row in that, riptide at the end of the season. Still end up going 9-11 in those 20-game stretch. So it kind of gave you a light that they were still going to be okay. But now that the games are running out, magic number is 6. Minnesota,
6 with 6 to go, right?
Yeah. Minnesota's hanging around, but you can knock that thing down to 4.
4 tonight.
Now, Tarik Skubal goes tonight for Detroit. You got to think they're probably going to win that game.
Right.
So you've got to handle business. And what that means is you got to not worry about what Minnesota's doing. You got to worry about, let us worry about what Minnesota, Detroit, and Seattle are doing. They're winning. You're not. figure that out, get the offense going tonight, lean on your superstars, and hopefully Salvador Perez can kind of lean in that into that role, and they can go into Washington and wallop them up because they're minus 170 on the money line in a baseball game. That's a heavy, heavy favorite.
Yeah, the Washington team, though, kind of reminds me of like these Royals teams in September of years past where they play great baseball down the stretch because they're young players, right? If the Washington Nationals were a veteran-laden team that were like in this malaise with the last six games, I'd like to think, okay, they're going to give up. These are still young guys fighting for jobs and fighting for spots and fighting for their ability to say they've arrived at the big league level. I don't think anybody in Washington is going to waste an at-bat, waste an opportunity, because they haven't got many of them. They're young guys on this team, much like the Royals were last year. You know, we talked about their September last year. Oh, this is great September. These young guys are playing good seemingly every September. Mm-hmm. The Royals find a way to get involved in the playoff race, even if they're not. That's where Washington is right now. I'm not discounting Washington right now because I don't know if the Royals are capable of scoring enough runs, Dusty. I mean, you mentioned getting Lorenzen back and Reagan's going today. Fantastic. Are they going to score? Because if they don't score, that doesn't matter who's on the mound. They've got to find a way to generate runs. And over this last seven games, what did you say yesterday? They averaged 1.8 runs per game on the homestand. That has nothing to do with pitching.
In a seven-game
losing streak. Yeah. They're averaging less than 2 runs per game. If that continues, they're not going to win any of these final six games. They have to find a way to get production out of that lineup. Who's going to be that guy that takes the pressure off of Salvi? Who's going to be that guy that allows Bobby Witt to see a hittable pitch, right? Like, in these last six games, Bobby Witt may not produce at all offensively because the other teams aren't going to allow him. And then that's going to put that pressure on Salvi. So who's going to be the guy that steps it up and alleviates that pressure from Salvador Perez and the ability for Bobby Witt to see a pitch? Is it going to be MJ? Is it going to be Garcia? Is it going to be Pham? Is it going to be some other random veteran that's on this team right now that, you know, was brought here to take that pressure off of Salvador Perez that isn't taking the pressure off of Salvador Perez right now? So I'm interested to see who on the offense is going to step up. And is Q going to start trying to play for one run? Like, if you get Bobby on, do you think about bunting them over? Do you think about stealing right away? Do you think about trying to manufacture runs to get something across the plate to let these guys breathe a little bit? Because if they don't score and inning by inning by inning goes by and they continue to not score, they're going to be pressing. They haven't scored, the last two games against the Giants, 18 straight innings without a run.
Right. So you'd have to think that there's some sort of hopeful explosion coming. I don't think that it has to be this way, but it seems like it might have to. Where you just have to see Bobby Witt go full God mode. Where, like, there were times where, like, when you'd see this with Mahomes, too, like, where the Chiefs are just struggling. Like, what can the Chiefs do? It's like, you just need Mahomes to be 23 of 25 for 285 yards, 3 touchdowns, just really control the game. And maybe that's what the Royals need, is Bobby Witt Jr. to go 3 for 4, have a home run, a double, and 3 RBI, and just kind of just really put the team on his back. And maybe that can be contagious, because right now, this team, I think, is one big inning away from figuring out what they can do offensively, because that's what they've been lacking in with their games that they played the last 7 game losing streak. They're not scoring runs. They're averaging 1.8. That's pathetic. You're not going to win any sort of games when it comes to that sort of offensive production. And somebody just quite simply has to step up. Are they pressing? Maybe a little bit, because they know that the end of the season is near. There's, again, 6 games left. They're only a one game lead on Detroit or the Minnesota Twins for the playoff spot. You're tied with Detroit. You're a game and a half above Seattle, who's winning against Houston. They play another one against them tonight. So look, I understand, but this is this type of thing that can build you for the future or for this year. This is also, if you want to take the other side of the conversation of light at the end of the tunnel, sometimes you got to get hot at the end.
Yeah.
These 6 games can maybe justify what they can be if they can limp into the playoffs. And then you go out there and you throw Michael Walker game 1. Maybe you win that game and you got a massive advantage in a 3-game series on the road where you're right now, if you want to look at it, you're playing at New York.
Yeah, you're playing. Well, somebody had said Baltimore, but whoever.
You play at Baltimore. If you win that series, then you would go to New York.
Then you would go to New York.
Right,
right. So you just got to find a way to score runs right now. I think it's back to the basics for the Royals. Stop pressing. Let's score some runs. And I would really like to see, as we talked about yesterday, the young guys getting an opportunity, because I think that builds character and it moves this organization forward, as opposed to, you know, kind of staying in this malaise. If you're going to have these final 6 games, I want to see what this team can do with some of these guys who are going to be part of the future. I don't need to see the Tommy Pham's or the, you know, whoever else is of the world in this lineup. I'm sure we will, but I mean, that's, you know, different than I would manage this team. I'd allow these young guys to get that experience at this time, because you can't recreate a six-game sprint to the finish like the Royals have right now, where every play, every pitch, every at-bat, everything is going to matter. You can't recreate that in May or June or July, and it's something that analytics can't bring to the table. And I think the Royals are mistakenly putting older veterans that aren't going to be part of the future into the lineup, as opposed to letting these young guys get the experience and learn from that experience, and maybe they have success in that experience. But something's got to give, man. You got to score at least two or three runs. And if you score two or three runs early, Cole Reagan's going to shut down the opposition, right? Like, I'm not worried about that at all. I'm not worried about Cole Reagan's. I'm worried about this offense coming alive and trying to find ways to push runs across the plate.
Excuses, excuses, excuses parlayed with Dane and Hughes on the other side here on Fesco and Dusty on 96.5 The Fan, your home for Kansas City sports.
You're listening to Fesco and Dusty on your new home for K-State athletics, 96.5 The Fan.
Welcome back to the airwaves of 96.5 The Fan, your home for Kansas City sports and your home for Fesco, Dusty, and Mac here on this lovely station and this show that we call Fesco and Dusty. Damn glad to have you on a Tuesday. Beautiful sunrise happening currently. But I want to bring up, before we get into Dane and Hughes, because you know how we do the Instagram videos?
Yeah.
Do the Chiefs Take Tuesday. My Chiefs Take, not Cheese Steak, even though that sounds amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, sorry, Mac.
Dang.
Mac just hit that Shannon Sharp face. If you know, you know. Oh, my God.
Yeah, the guy dressed as
Trevor Lawrence.
Trevor Lawrence
might
last
be better
night.
Than Trevor
yeah.
Lawrence.
He may be. Yeah. At 400 pounds, that guy is better than Trevor Lawrence right now.
So is Caleb Williams, and so is Kyler Murray.
Trevor Lawrence is not good.
Would you rather have Kyler Murray or Trevor Lawrence?
Neither.
Kyler. Come on.
I'd contract my franchise if those were my two issues right there.
I love
Trevor Lawrence or Kyler
that.
Murray, I'm out.
not watching football.
My take this week was that, again, we're going to have another week in the NFL season this year where the Chiefs are going to get a W, and it's going to come with a loaded amount of excuses. Because now you play the Chargers, who are going to be without half of their roster.
That's exactly right. All of the guys are out.
No Joe Alt.
Right.
I mean, I'm pretty sure they're without both of their tackles.
Yeah, Rashawn Slater out as well. Yeah. May. I mean, it is Tuesday. Yeah. You know, right. the healing of athletes happens fast.
We'll have to watch practices on Thursday and Friday to see who's a DNP and who's an LP.
Right.
I mean, what is it, MCL sprain?
Yeah, MCL sprain. I think he's out, right? I think it's safe to say he's out for a while.
Herbert, which is too bad.
It really is, because he's a hell of a football player. Yeah.
I don't think for George to go up
either. I also don't think you trot Herbert out there with no tackles against the Chiefs early in the season. I know that there's a lot riding on this game when it comes to conference play. I don't think Denver's an issue. I know they just did pretty well against Baker and Tampa. They're not the Chiefs.
No.
I don't think you have to worry about the Vegas Raiders. Even though they beat you last year on Christmas, just wait until you play them this
get
year.
Get your popcorn ready October 27th.
There's a surprise coming for that. And then, you know, you look at what the Chiefs have done already. They beat Baltimore. They've beaten Cincinnati, which doesn't mean anything at this point anymore.
No.
But you look and see what this game is going to be. Herbert left the game in a walking boot.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't have any tackles. So if you put him out there, he's probably going to get absolutely crushed by this defensive front. And now we've just been told that Derwin James is not going to make the game.
That's right.
Daniel Popper on X says, can confirm Derwin James has been suspended one game for repeated violations of a player health and safety rules. The Chargers 2-time Walter Payton Man of the Year nominee will appeal per sources, according to Daniel Popper on X. So the Chargers, according to Jeff Schwartz, then quote tweets it and says, so the Chargers will be without at least one offensive tackle, maybe both, Derwin James, and their quarterback is in a walking boot. Chiefs should win this game on Sunday.
Well, they should.
And it will come loaded with a bunch of excuses.
It will. But that's what it is right now for the Chiefs. I like the fact that the guy from Blues Traveler is now reporting on the Chargers injuries. The Derwin James one, though, that guy's just a dirty douchebag, right? Like, you're out here hurting players. You got suspended for, like, targeting players and trying to hurt other guys in the NFL. And you're an alleged Walter Payton Man of the Year. A Walter Payton Man of the Year
nominee
honoree.
Twice. Yeah.
Well, I'm going to say, a Walter Payton nominee two times over is not the type of guy who's supposed supposed to go out there and try to maliciously injure other players. Pete Freiermuth is the guy he was targeting in that game against Pittsburgh. I don't know, you know, and you guys may remember better than I do. Do you ever remember the NFL issuing a suspension like this? Sir, you're no longer allowed to play because you're out here trying to hurt everybody, and we don't want that. Like, I don't remember that suspension ever happening. I don't think he's a Walter Payton Man of the Year nominee anymore after doing something like that, because this is a brotherhood in the NFL. And really, at the end of the day, all these guys are in it together. They just want to make a living. They want to get some money. They want to get to their pension. They want to get out of the game and not get injured and live their lives. And if you've got a guy on a team that is going out there and maliciously trying to hurt others to where it, you know, comes with a suspension from the NFL, people aren't going to like Derwin James. He's not going to be a very popular player around this league. But I'm kind of with you. If you have Rashawn Slater and Joe Alt both out of this game, who are two awesome, like, I would take those two guys right now on this football team, right? Wouldn't you right now? Oh, yeah. I mean, I don't think anybody would say I'd rather have Wanya Morris and whoever at tackle other than Joe Alt and Rashawn Slater. You take those two guys out of your lineup with George Karloftis and Chris Jones and whatnot. If I'm Harbaugh, I'm like, dude, Justin, you ain't playing this week. We don't care about this game. Preserving you and making sure you don't get injured beyond belief is more important than going out there and trying to win this game against the Chiefs. Easton Stick, welcome to the NFL. You get the opportunity now to go out there and play against the Kansas City Chiefs. But to the excuse part, man, this is the NFL. You got to go out there and play. And the reason the Chiefs are better than everybody else in this league is because their bottom portion of their roster is really, really good. Like, they know how to draft and develop and sign and go get players so that, like, 40 to 53 is thought about as much as 1 to 40 is in this organization. And if you don't think about the bottom third of your roster, then when injuries like this happen, you don't stand a chance. And right now, I don't know that Cincinnati, or not Cincinnati, but San Diego stands a chance against the Chiefs.
You hear them on game days in the booth.
Quickly, they get chunky and funky with stretching the field vertically.
And Thursday nights at 6 during Players Only.
Spitfire, hot fire take.
Here's Chiefs Radio Network color analyst, Dinnan Hughes, on your new home for Chiefs football, 96.5 The Fan.
That's right. It's that time on a Tuesday, 7:25, as we are joined by the man, the myth, the legend, Dinnan Hughes, brought to you by Blue Cross and Blue Shield of Kansas City. Discover the benefit of blue. DH, how are you on this another victory week, going 3-0 so far in this young season?
Feeling good, fellas. How you guys doing?
Feeling good, too, man. We're 3-0.
I can't complain. I'm getting real tired of the excuses that the NFL is giving the Chiefs for winning football games. I'm wondering if that has affected, you know, the league because they just keep winning and they're running out of excuses, I should say. But it looks like there's not going to go anywhere from the excuses this week, as the Chargers are, Dana, the Chargers are beat up pretty big in the third week of the season. And they go, it doesn't get any easier. They play the defending, two-time defending champs in a row. Patrick Mahomes and company with a loaded roster that looks pretty good so far in this young season, going 3-0.
Yeah, you definitely got to be happy first and foremost with being 3-0. However way you get there, I mean, there are teams out there that are 0-3, 1-2 that wish they could be 3-0, and they don't care whether or not you question the officials or calls or no calls, et cetera. I love the people on Twitter or X or whatever you're calling it that come back and talk about how rigged it is, because you can go tit for tat in regards to calls that were made or not made that should have been made. And, you know, we also got the stat of how the Chiefs have been, you know, the highest penalized team or for the most yardage and top five, et cetera. Like, people forget all that. And the game of football is so fast. I would hate to be an official. I love the fact, to be honest, and whether this makes me a homer or not, I love the fact that we fare on the positive side of those calls that equate to win. So, like, that's the name of the game. Some teams are able to overcome. Some teams are able not to overcome. Some teams, like the Chargers in the past, have been teams that under Staley, they figure out ways to lose games. They had us beat several times, and they figured out ways to lose games, and we are a team and an organization that figure out ways to win. But, yeah, whatever way we can get – wins in this league, I'll take them.
You know, Dan, and you mentioned you don't want to be an official because of how fast the game is. And that kind of hit me this weekend. I'm watching the league and you're like, damn, the offenses are good, but now defenses have caught up to the offenses in this league. Everybody has speed. Everybody is fast. Everybody is quick on the field. Linemen are lean. Linemen are thin. Like, this league went and got fast, it seems like, overnight. And offenses, I think, are going to have to rework the way that they attack defenses, because defenses aren't, like, scared anymore about speed because they all have speed.
Yeah, you're exactly right.
Thank you.
And I will tell you that when the Chiefs, or what we're seeing from the Chiefs, are a perfect example of offenses making adjustments. Now we're not necessarily clicking on all cylinders right now. We're not playing our best football offensively. Patrick has already said he's critiquing his own play, and it's not up to his level. But what you're seeing from offenses, and think about it from this perspective, a lot of the game, even though last night we saw some vertical plays, Terry McLaurin, Jamar Chase, big plays down the field, Jaden Daniels throws, et cetera. A lot of the game is being played horizontally. It's being played sideline to sideline, crossing routes, what we saw from Rashee Rice, what we see normally from Travis Kelce, is a horizontal game. The game that the teams, whether it's the Ravens, the Bengals, or this past weekend with the Falcons, a lot of their plays against us were horizontal plays. How you negate some of that speed, the vertical speed on defense, is that you go from sideline to sideline. You use pick plays. You use crossing routes. We saw the Eagles win against the Saints because they ran a crossing route with Dallas Goedert, and he's able to scamper down the sideline. So you do have that speed, and some of the vertical game that we've become accustomed to seeing is negated by the defensive speed, but that's where the creativity of guys like Matt Nagy and Andy Reid come into play with the horizontal game, and that's working for us.
We talked about it earlier in the show, the kind of like the season so far that Rashee Rice is having. He leads the league in yards after catch, which is a big one for you guys that play the wide receiver position. I want to ask you this, because we were talking to our Chiefs contributor, Josh Briscoe, and a lot of people, obviously, the sky is falling for a lot of Travis Kelce people out there. Is there a little bit of a torch passing that, like, it doesn't need to be Kelce first? It's more like it's a Rashee Rice option first in this offense, and then we'll move forward and see what we need to go after next?
Well, I've been saying for just about a year now, and maybe a little bit less than a year, because it took him a little while to come along, but I thought he was, outside of Tyreek Hill, he was one of the most, if not the most, dynamic runners after the catch because of how quickly he gets downhill. As soon as he catches the ball, he's not looking to the sideline. He's looking to plant his foot and get downhill, north-south runner, like a running back. And so I'm not surprised that he's the top of the league at yards after catch. To me, that's a huge asset, and that's part of the reason why we can kind of go to him as the number one target, because Travis Kelce, he makes plays, but he also draws a lot of attention. And if I have an opportunity to throw the ball to Rashee Rice and know that a 5-yard gain is going to could turn into a 20-yard gain while trying to fit it into a tight slot to Travis Kelce, I'm going to go to Rashee Rice. And I commend Patrick, especially with his relationship with Travis, with success that he's had with Travis, with still putting the team first, putting the offense first, and recognizing, you know what, my boy Travis is my boy. We're going to go hang out at some concerts. We're going to have some fun. But in this play, on this drive, in this game, he's not the guy that I can go to. There's another player, Rashee Rice, that's making big plays, and I got to do what's best for the offense. And I commend him for that. That's a maturity level that I think Patrick Mahomes continues to climb to, but it's still we just got done with week 3.
Mm-hmm.
Like, Travis is one of those guys that can turn around and get a 12-target, 14-target game and have 10 catches for over 100 yards, multiple games, and we'll be talking about this like it's ancient history.
Well, and that was kind of my follow-up to you, Dane. And when do the defenses start adjusting to take Rashee Rice out as the number one option and then freeing Travis Kelce up?
Yeah, I don't know if they can. Like I said, because if you line up on the outside of the numbers, the days of the Marvin Harrisons and the wide receivers that just line up on the outside of the numbers and just work on an island by themselves, those days are over. Like the movement, the shifts, the motions, the mesh plays, the pick plays, et cetera, that's like the new age NFL. So if you're trying to take Rashee Rice away, how do you do that if he's running across the field?
Right.
Not necessarily vertically, but across the field. So that makes it tough. You start bumping coverages, and if he runs this crossing route, the linebacker will pick him up in the middle. Like, okay, do you want your linebacker picking up Rashee Rice in the middle of the field where he can outrun him to the corner? The opposite corner is going to pick him up. Well, what about the deep route that's behind that corner? So it makes it extremely tough to bump coverages. I did see an adjustment by the Atlanta Falcons, specifically Jesse Bates III, on we tried to run that same play that we won two Super Bowls with when we were down in the red zone, and the safety came down and made the play, or at least covered the receiver running that little arrow route. And that was the first time I saw a team make an adjustment to that. We obviously won two Super Bowls on the same play, so the Eagles and Niners couldn't figure it out. But that might be a recipe for messing up that play for us. But then Andy Reid and Matt Nagy is going to come away with something that will offset that. That'll still make us dominant.
Danan, I think, you know, a lot of Chiefs fans are living in 2018 still, right? Where you're going to score 50 points a game and maybe blow somebody out and have these, you know, fun wins. That's just not the case anymore. And I'm okay with that. I think it's better to win close. I think you learn more as a team when you win close than when you blow somebody out. Blowouts are fun. They're relaxing. But when you win games like the Chiefs have already won these first three games, doesn't that build character and make you better as the season goes along?
Absolutely. It makes you feel confident that in any circumstance, in any situation, if you're not playing your best football, if the defense is not playing well, you have confidence that your offense will pick you up. If the offense is not playing well, you have confidence that your defense will pick you up. And that's the true recipe for success for any championship team. Not successful team, not winning team, championship team. And that's what we have to embrace here in the Chiefs kingdom, is that we are a championship team. We have set the bar so high that I do get it that maybe we get a little disgruntled because we're not putting up the points and Patrick's throwing another interception or Travis is not the factor for the offense like we've become accustomed to, but it's all part of the process. And if you look at how this team is built, like there are teams, and I said this, I don't know if I said it last week, but maybe 2 weeks ago, there are teams that we've seen the absolute best from them already. It's already week three, and they can get no better. They can only get worse. They can just hope that they can continue to play on the level that they're playing right now. We haven't even scratched the surface yet. Like we're just playing complimentary football where the defense gives up a bunch of yards to Lamar Jackson. The offense takes over. The offense sputters along against the Falcons. The defense takes over. Like, once everything kind of clicks and comes together, I mean, I feel bad for the opponents that will have to deal with that. And I'm okay with that being in week 12, week 14, week 16, as long as it's something that we can carry into the playoffs. Because, again, the bar is Super Bowls. The bar is championships. It's not just being a winning team.
I think it's interesting when you look at the NFL schedule. Again, we're talking to Danan Hughes here on Fesco and Dusty on 96.5 The Fan, your home for Kansas City sports. Look, you play the Chargers this week. It's a rivalry game. I know it'll probably be closer than people like, but, I mean, you got to think, Derwin James kind of been the, you know, annoying voice or coverage for Travis Kelce. Travis Kelce looks for a big game to break out of this, you know, this little pre-three-game skid. You look at this possibility with no Justin Herbert. Is this one of those games where maybe you'd like to see the Chiefs win by more than 4 or 5, or does it really matter in your mindset as long as you just get the W?
So anytime we can blow out a divisional opponent, I'm all for.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I will take a 3, 4, 5-point win and head right back to Kansas City from the West Coast. But here's the thing that I think people, I wouldn't say be concerned about, just be aware of. Preparing for people that have not played a lot of football is probably one of the more difficult things that coordinators and coaching staff have to deal with. And if whether it's Easton Stick or it's your backup safety or offensive lineman that you haven't seen a lot of film on, having film on good players almost gives coaches a little bit more peace than having no film on players that you haven't really seen yet. So with Joe Alt, obviously a teammate of mine, his son, and John Alt, would have loved to see him out there. But the fact remains is injury is a part of the game. But, like, let's not mistake the idea that just because they got 3, 4, 5 starters that are going to be out of the game because of injuries, that this is going to make it a walk in the park. Like, there's such parity. We talk about parity between teams. There's parity between the depth chart on every team. Like, the next player up is not that much worse than the player that's ahead of them. Like, there's a lot of commonalities there. So I don't want anybody to get on this mindset that this is going to be a blowout. They're going to come out fighting. Jim Harbaugh is going to have them prepared. They're going to be on their home field. They obviously don't want to have another loss this early in the season. They're going to have some fight in them, but we're the better football team.
Danan, which is more difficult? Because you played baseball, okay? So hitting an unknown pitcher or prepping for an unknown player in football? And Brad, I'll have a follow-up.
Definitely baseball. It okay. is tougher. Hitting a baseball, even Deion Sanders has said it, the difficult thing in sports. I know there's some golfers out there that would say different, but hitting Praise a baseball, me. No matter whose it's coming from, is definitely the most difficult thing in sports.
So it's harder to hit against an unknown pitcher than it is to play against an unknown player in football.
Yes.
Okay. And then finally, can you bat fifth for the Royals? Do you have any hits left in that bat? They need a number 5 hitter. Are you available?
So I could probably swing it a little bit, but getting from home to first is going to be difficult.
Fair enough. All right, Daniel, we'll have a good call on Sunday. We'll listen to you on the Chiefs pregame and during the game as well. Hopefully you come back from L.A. We have 4-0 color commentator.
Yes, let's do it.
All right, brother. Take care, Daniel.
That's Danan Hughes there, who is brought to you by Blue Cross and Blue Shield of Kansas City. Discover the benefit of blue. Coming up on the other side, I can't believe this. I think I'm in the minority of this guy being on the hot seat on the collegiate level. Mac Morey, Bob Fesco, Dusty Leggins. You're listening to Fesco and Dusty on 96.5 The Fan, your home for Kansas City sports.
Fesco and Dusty.
I can feel it all the way down in my plums.
On Kansas City's FM sports station, 96.5 The Fan.
Welcome back into 96.5 The Fan. Fesco and Dusty with you on a Tuesday. A little Taco Tuesday.
There you go.
What's the best meat for a taco?
Oh, I don't know. I'm a big fish or shrimp taco guy.
Not mad about that.
Yeah, I like those a lot.
What kind of fish?
Oh, usually white. Fish, just a you know, generic, like a cod, usually grilled, not fried.
Yeah, grilled for sure.
Yeah, like a little blackened fish taco.
Little blackened fish taco is really good. Oh. Yeah, Cactus has some unbelievable out there. Blue Hawk, some salmon tacos. Brie freaking osh, brother.
I like a good like carnitas.
That's a good one too. Or San Antonio's has great carnitas.
Oh, God. Oh. Matt got his first dose of that the other week from our buddy Robert.
Oh, yes. San Antonio's.
I forgot to tell you about it. Those were good.
Yeah, those are fantastic. Best in the city, man. Go down there on a Saturday, wait in the line, get your tacos, sit down there, use the salsa bar. Oh, it's so good.
You know what I've never had good ones of, so I really don't know if they taste good. Burrito tacos. I've never had like a good burrito taco.
How do you know if it's good or bad, though? If you like, they're kind of, I want to say new, if you will, on the food scene,
it
right?
It feels like it.
Like, how do you
trendy.
Know if it's good or, yes. That's the better word to use. How do you know if they're good or bad, right? Like, if you have one, maybe you just don't like it, and you don't know if it's good or bad at this point in time. I don't know, you know?
If you want a cheap option for tacos tonight, Albalertos or whatever it's called, the ones that's up here or up over here, there's a couple of them.
Oh, yeah, there's a couple of them around town.
They have 5 for $5.99.
Who's this, Arby's? I mean, that's great. 5 for $5.95? Mm-hmm. You can't beat that.
I get the puffy chicken ones.
Ooh,
and then I get a side of chips and queso.
Yeah.
And then just get nasty.
Torchy's tacos are really good as well, too. If you've had some Torchy's tacos before, they are really good as well. But I'm telling you, man, these salmon tacos, they have had a Cactus. I mean, just incredible. I don't know. They're so good, man. So good. So get yourself some tacos. You can weigh in as well on the text line where you like to get tacos from, you know? Tell us.
Hard shell, soft shell? Sorry.
I'm soft shell guy.
I mean, it doesn't matter, but I prefer the corn. Like
yeah, corn tortilla.
Style taco.
Okay, yeah. Same.
I can't tell you the last time I had a hard taco.
Really?
Yeah. Wow. I mean, I just don't hard taco at all.
I mean, my favorite kind of taco would be like the dub deck where you put the hard shell inside
now,
the soft
shell.
Now,
that's a different ballgame. Like, that's, yeah.
That's like an anomaly. Yes. Like, that's,
yeah. That is fantastic.
Talking about brioche.
Yeah. Yeah. Like the double decker taco. Oh. Smear the beans on the outside of the hard shell, yes. Slap the
and
soft
then just
shell
load
around
it.
It.
Like a little taco blanket.
Oh, my God. It's so good. Yeah. You, what did you call it?
A little taco blanket.
Oh, okay. You made fun of the cheese blanket, right? Yeah, exactly. Now you got a taco blanket. Like
that's funny how that works.
Uh-huh. Interesting, huh? Very interesting. Oh, cheese blanket. Ha, ha, ha. Now he's going with taco blanket.
I don't understand this, and maybe I'm wrong, and you guys can talk this into my mind. Lance Leipold's on the hot seat?
Well, he seems to think so. I think this is the type of season, like, if it goes south at KU, he's not going to get fired. But, dot, 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 if it goes south at KU... He may be thinking, maybe I've accomplished everything I can here. Boy, that Florida State job looks really interesting right now. Why do you think he's on the hot seat? Because as Dusty said before the show, this is a program that was winning one game a year for a generation, right? And now they've got a new stadium. They've got all this great stuff going on. They're not off to a good start this year, and they've kind of been forgotten about. But I don't think Lance Leipold is on the quote-unquote hot seat because I could see Lance leaving on his own for a Florida State, but I don't – that guy basically has the key to the city next to Bill Self, you know?
Well, having success without expectations is one thing. Now all the expectations have been put up, and you – what are you, 1-3? You've completely crapped the bed. And what have you really done at Kansas? You've been there since 2020. You had a 9-4 season last year. It was great. Obviously, quarterback gets hurt. Could have been better, but the expectations were set. You know, playoff hopes were there. Winning the conference was in the, you know, eyesight.
No, you're right. 3 weeks ago, we were talking about KU or K-State winning potentially the league and getting into the playoff. You're
and
right.
So to me, yep. I mean, and I look at what he did at Buffalo, and I'm just kind of curious. I don't really know. You guys were here when this all happened, when he was hired, so I don't really know the how that all transpired. I mean, the progression of his career, but I mean, he had one really good season at Buffalo, 10-2. He went 6-1 the COVID year, then they had to stop playing. So, I mean, in the action, he had two really what seemed to be really good years, and now he's here and he's had one good season, 9-4, and now they're crap in the bed when the expectations are set. I'm just saying, my ears are perked up.
Sure, no, and I understand where you're coming from, but the guy is a program builder. We'll talk to Binkley about it tomorrow, Dustman.
Yes.
And you know, this guy was at Wisconsin Whitewater, built a nice program there, went on to Buffalo, built a nice program there, came into Lawrence, which was you know, it might as well been death warmed over. That 100%. Was the football program, right? Like, oh my God, this is like the worst possible Division I football program you could ever inherit. Stadium falling apart, a disinterested fan base, and you're dwarfed by basketball, right?
Yeah,
in a football world, you have no relevancy whatsoever. And it's not just one good season. His first season was a building season, obviously. But the year after that, we all won money on KU because everybody took the over and they ended up getting 6 or 7
wins. 6-7. Yeah.
Then they won 9, you know, the following season. And so that's a nice progression. But it is different playing with expectations than it is playing without expectations. And it's different being a leader with expectations than without expectations. And it's different being a player with expectations than without expectations. You have to know how to handle those expectations. And when you have expectations, ask Patrick Mahomes. You have to actually work harder than you did when you don't have expectations because you're not surprising everybody. Teams are ready for you right now. The Illinois loss doesn't look as bad as it did.
That's
they
true.
Went into Nebraska and allegedly a sellout at Nebraska and, you know, beat Nebraska on Friday night. I think the West Virginia loss does kind of stink out loud, you know, a little
bad.
Bit. That's a bad loss. But I could see a situation this year where they go like 7-4, maybe if you got 11 games or whatever it is, or maybe you're 8-3, maybe you run the table, maybe you win 6-5, whatever it is. And somebody like Florida State comes calling for Lance Leipold, and that may be the time where that he decides to jump and go to a quote unquote bigger program. But he does have something good going at KU, and maybe he does want to see it through.
You bring up 7-4. The remaining schedule for the Kansas Jayhawks, they play TCU this weekend at 2:30 at home. Well, I guess that'd be at either Arrowhead. Yeah. Then you go to Arizona State, tough game. Arizona State's 3-1. Then you get Houston. Then you go to Manhattan, Iowa State, and then you finish with BYU, Colorado, Baylor.
Ooh.
Dang.
It's a tough schedule.
It is, man. How are you going to get 7 out of that,
exactly.
Right? You got to find 6 more wins the rest of the way.
I don't know what the win this weekend is going to get called. I mean, I was jacked with that Colorado win. I can tell
that was
much.
Great win. I mean, we didn't even talk about the ending of that thing. God, let's
Hail
go.
Mary, yeah, man, you love Sanders. That. Oh, yeah, I was jacked.
I was talking to one of the guys at the J yesterday about just sports in general. He goes, I just get entertained by it. And sometimes people lose sight of this as entertainment. Did you not get entertained by the Colorado ending the other night? Like, brings you to the party, man. That's exciting. That's entertainment.
But the thing is, it's not like he's getting blown out. Like, you lost at Illinois, who I think is a better team than people give them credit for, at least this early in the season. Maybe KU's not the team that people thought they were, so there's that fair both sides of the argument.
Sure.
You lost to UNLV. That's a tough one.
Yep.
23-20. Didn't get blown out. You lost at West Virginia. Should have won, but you lost 32-28. Now you play TCU. So if you're going to be a bowl team, you got to win at least five more games. Can you beat TCU, Arizona State, Houston, K-State, Iowa State, BYU, Colorado, Baylor? You probably can beat Colorado if you think about it. Colorado's probably on the same level field as you are.
Yeah.
You could probably beat Baylor, too, I would think. So now you've got two wins. So now you've got at least three total. Somewhere you got to beat Houston. You got to pick up a win against either TCU. You got to pick up a win either against Arizona State. Iowa State's good. So, yeah, they might not make a bowl game this year. If they do, they'd be three in a row.
And that's I mean, you might as well put a statue of Lance Leipold outside of the renovated stadium if they win if they have three winning seasons in a row. The bar is low in Lawrence, Kansas, when it comes to the football team, right? It is, and so you're not going to have a season every year where you win nine games. It's hard again to do, but if you go 7-4 or even 6-5 at this point in time and have a winning season, I think people will say, okay, you may have taken a step back. Now let's see what you can do going into next season. I don't believe Lance is on the hot seat at all in this one. He's the best coach maybe in the history of the University of Kansas.
I think you could say
that. Well, who else is better?
I mean, Mangino
won the Orange Bowl, but he only had 2 years.
So far,
Lance has had 2 years.
6-7 and 9-4. I'm giving him 1 year.
Yeah.
Give him one year.
Okay, 1 year. Trending to be. I mean,
fair enough.
Trending to be. Like Mangino is one of my favorites of all time, but he got run out of town real fast. I don't think people would look at Mark Mangino. Glenn Mason maybe up there on that list. What I'm getting at, the list is very, very true. Who's the best wide receiver in Chiefs history, right? Yeah. It's like finding the power hitting outfielder in Royals history or whatever the case may be. Kansas has never been good in football. They have an opportunity to sustain something really, really good up there. They're not going to get rid of Lance Leipold, because if they get rid of Lance Leipold, then the butterfly effect is, who are you going to get to take that job? You fired a guy after building a stadium and turning it around?
That's a
dead-end job. Nobody will take that job in Lawrence, Kansas. They would be calling me to take that job.
Well, all I'll say is in 6 months, if it's 5-7 for KU this year, in 6 months it's March, Super Bowl's done, we're like, oh, let's look at college football, scrimmages, recruiting classes. The conversation will be, okay,
they can be anywhere near my plate.
Lance, last year was bad, 5-6. You won six games that 1 year. There's a 1-9-win season. This is a big year.
Sure.
If it went 5 wins, next year is going to be okay. You better do something for me.
Well, it really is, to your point a little bit, I don't think there's any hot seat involved whatsoever. But if they end up like a wet fart, which is what's going on right now, you're opening that new stadium next year.
Mm.
How many tickets are going to be moved if you're coming off a 5-6 type of season, or even a 6-5 season? Like, people want to go watch a winner. The stadium will be a draw for a hot minute. Once people see it, then they're going to want to have a product that wins. But this is the worst possible time for Kansas to be a wet fart, because you're trying to sell tickets moving forward to next year. And I don't know about you guys, I've seen a lot of advertisements for no fees on tickets at Arrowhead. A buddy of mine, I'm not going to say who unless he mentions it in public, got a deal on a suite at a KU game this weekend. So I don't think there's a lot of interest right now. And that's not a good thing when you're getting ready to unveil this new stadium. That's why it is important for Kansas to figure this thing out, win some games, and get that excitement back. Couple of wins in the Big 12, people will be excited again about that football program.
Somebody brings up good point, I guess you could say, on the text line where it says, not to mention the West Virginia game, they did have a huge weather delay.
Excuses.
Lightning.
West Virginia had a delay, too.
Okay.
And Kansas was up, I think, 28-17.
Well, they had the momentum, and then it stalled, yeah. And then you get a lot of time. I'm just saying, that's an anomaly of a situation. Yeah. Like that's a not happened very often in football games where you're
right,
have to stop.
But the other team figured out a way, too. So, yeah. You
know. And I want to give Lance credit. I mean, you're right. They was 4-year stretch to think KU won 8 games. He won 9 in one season. Yeah. So I want to give Lance some credit. He's rebuilt what has been a poop fest.
Yeah, no, and that's an understatement.
Yeah.
It is possibly a new day in the world of football that was once the way for the NFL and the league that they played many, many moons ago. We'll discuss what that is on the other side. I'm Dusty Likens, Bob Fesco, Mac Morey. You're listening to Fesco and Dusty on 96.5 The Fan, your home for Kansas City sports.
You're listening to Fesco and Dusty on your home for Kansas City sports. 96.5 The Fan.